This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the April 20th, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. We have Karen Schaefer in the house. Karen is a certified financial planner, principal in Schaefer Financial, fellow seminar presenter, and a whole lot of other things. And we're going to talk about financial do's and don'ts during a pandemic. We're going to talk about personal financial planning provisions of the CARES Act and everything else. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Bob. And actually, I'm in my house, so we're doing our social distancing and keeping everybody healthy.
Okay, that's good. We got a long distance between the studio and your house.
So. That's right.
All righty. So financial do's and don'ts. I bet you've been peppered with, what do I do? How do I do it? When do I do it? I can't get into it. Where do we go first?
Right. Well, and the first thing really is to get a little perspective here that, you know, that this too will end. I think it's very easy for people to get completely overwhelmed and kind of spiral down to a place where good decisions just don't get made. So, of course, we have everybody focusing on staying healthy and staying positive and making the most out of what we can. You know, so many of the people that you and I talk to, Bob, are so fortunate to be getting paychecks, so fortunate to be able to work from home and continue on. And so, you know, that's the first message. The second is don't let the uncertainty drive you crazy, right? I think that's nobody knows how we're going to be able to get back to normal or what the new normal is going to be. And that's very unsettling to human beings. But we get through this. We're pretty darn resilient. In 1987, we didn't know the market was going to bounce back. In the year 2000, we didn't know how long the dot-com bubble was going to burst and ripple through and last for the rest of our lives. For heaven's sakes, in 2001, we had no idea how many different ways terrorists could come at us. So uncertainty is just part of a crisis that we really have to tell people, you know, breathe in, breathe out. Let's do our, we'll make much, much better decisions if we're not making the decision when we're worried. And then the other part of it is let's not link pandemic with economy, with stock market. A curve is going to flatten over here, and a stock market move up or down is going to happen over there, and then the economy is doing its thing. They don't all happen at once, and we all have a tendency to say, "Oh my gosh, I thought we were getting good news, and now there might be a second wave," and to think that that ripples through in lockstep, the economy and the market. It just doesn't. But you know what really is the biggest message, and I bet you've heard this too. I've already been on the phone with two people this morning. You can't panic sell. It's just, I had two people follow up from a class I taught last week with little emails. Okay, I looked at my account and I was down 8%, so I moved everything into the G fund. Did I do the wrong thing?
Uh-oh.
How do you think I answered that, Bob?
I think I know. We've been friends for a long time, and it's a very short burst. And what is it?
Yeah, you know, buy low, sell high doesn't mean watch the market drop and then get out. So I'm trying to get people to focus on, there's something that accountants use all the time, this terminology known as a realized or an unrealized loss. It's not realized. It's an unrealized loss. It's like not a real thing when you just look at your account and it's worth less than it was the last time you looked at it. It only becomes a real thing and a mistake when you say, yep, that's the price I want. I'm going to sell and now move to cash. And that's a realized loss. And we don't make those up. If you just ride through the storm, you can look at your accounts the next day and see, wow, how did that happen? All I did was sanitize my hands and, you know, walk around the block and my account's up. And that's what happens on good market days. So we're trying to get people to understand that the best investment decisions are always made with a longer term view and to the time frame on when you're going to spend the money, as opposed to a decision on what the heck is going on today, right? I've had a few reporters call, and they're looking for, of course, the dramatic story of the horrible somebody lost everything, and those stories just don't exist for the clients of financial planners. And that doesn't mean that our clients aren't worried, but when they call and say, Karen, what should I do? Well, do you need any money? Because we've got plenty of money set aside for your needs and wants over the next several years just sitting there in cash. And so, you know, if you need something, we don't need to sell anything in these lousy prices. And I think people are also pretty surprised when the headline news is, because Chicken Little was right, the sky has fallen. Their accounts don't look so bad because they're diversified. You know, it's not all in whatever fell the furthest and made the lead story.
When you deal with clients, maybe do the age spectrum, the early on, the under 30s, if you will, what do you look to tell them, because they have a longer time to ride drops and a longer time to enjoy ups? But is there some ratio that they need in cash? Do they need 6 months' worth of expenses?
Well, I think everybody's heard there's this rule of thumb that says you should keep 3 to 6 months' worth of something or other, whether it's fixed expenses or income set aside, ideally in a separate account so that it's not something that you're looking at every day. And really, it would be a big decision to go tap that account. I've always, and there's nothing wrong with that rule. It's easy to understand, but I've always found that in personal financial planning, we can do much better than that. And the way you do much better than that is to really think about the things you know that are big ticket or irregular expenses, whether they're, you know, like deferred maintenance on the house. Eventually, the roof does have to get repaired, right? Or just something you want to do. I want to buy a nicer car than what I absolutely need, or I want to something that I want to send my daughter to sleepaway camp this summer, which is, you know, more of a want than a need, but it would be good for her, kind of thing. So these are all things that I can anticipate in the next several years that are big ticket. Some of them are discretionary, some of them are not, but they're in my personal plan. They're all things that maybe I want to do. And I hold people to the standard of, let's just go ahead and plan for those things with cash. So I won't rely on debt for something that I know I need or want to do. And I'll just be setting that aside, sometimes in a separate account. Some people are pretty intuitive about this. They don't need separate accounts. But when I need the money, it's there. So what happens when you decide your emergency money is whatever you personally are going to need over the next 3 to 5 years for the big ticket, irregular, wish listy sorts of things, sometimes it's way more than 3 to 6 months, and sometimes it's actually less. Somebody getting ready to send a kid to college and they're going to pay for a lot of that would have way more cash than somebody who's kind of been there, done that, or not raising kids. And both of them could be equally prepared, in my financial planning world, for what we say is a financial emergency. If you're really just getting started and you're in your late 20s, early 30s, and now you finally got the real job and you're feeling like you're making real adult decisions, and you don't have enough life experience to really see, you've got a good intuition about anticipating things, sure, start off with a rule of thumb. 3 to 6 months worth of fixed expense, 3 months worth of income, or 6 months worth of fixed overhead. And you know how we describe that, Bob. That's just, if I don't have at least this much money coming in the door each month, bad things happen. So, you know, what are my essential bills that I've got to pay? And then, of course, for a young person, has to hold themselves to the standard of the credit card gets paid in full. We just don't negotiate on that. And if we've been a little sloppy with that, or if life slapped us around a couple times already and the evidence is on the outstanding balance on the credit card, we get hyper-focused on that and we start selling things on eBay. I went to the post office and it was a pretty safe experience. So let's, you know, really focus on being as financially responsible and effective as we can to avoid the emergency.
Could we take a look at, you've certainly talked to everybody on the spectrum with regards to financial literacy, let's call it. Let's take somebody late mid-career, early pre-retirement, and we've got a debt issue. How do we get rid of that debt? There's a psychological aspect to it, and there's a cash flow. So where do you go first?
Well, I always want people to understand why they have the debt. Sometimes we can point to something. You know, I was doing great, and then out of nowhere, I went through a divorce, and the legal fees were high, and it took a long time, and for the first time in my life, I've ended up with credit card debt. I don't worry too much about that person. We just kind of set up a schedule that's realistic. Maybe we work an extra 6 months or something. There's lots of we push off some discretionary spending, and they come out of it. It's not pleasant, but they come out of it. There's the other person that I do worry about and that has always been in the habit of helping other people. It's part of their identity. And so while they have a good job, and they've got great benefits and they're eligible to retire and they sure would love to, they've always got these family members, that hangers-on that are always coming up with emergencies. And, of course, I have to help them because I'm the only one in the family who has a good job is the story I get. You know what? Even if I could help them get out of debt, it's going to happen again. And it's because that's part of their identity. They're the fixer. And it's not – and it feels good to help other people. It doesn't feel good to say no. But it's almost like I can, you know, take it right back to kids don't like to eat vegetables, but it works out okay, right? Sometimes the harder message is actually better for everybody to be stronger and healthier. And so, you know, some people kind of know when you point it out to them, you're right, and they slowly change their behavior, and we just agree you're not retiring until you've had those tough conversations or you've drawn those lines. So it doesn't help the family for you to be financially fragile. And then I give them the, okay, there's a logical way to pay off debt, right? There are programs out there that help people. There's actually a whole new field in financial planning, financial therapists, people who can go to a level that I wouldn't be qualified to go to, really helping people understand the underlying issues they have that are causing them to hang on to debt when everybody knows this is really unsustainable. It's just not going to help. I will say, though, Bob, that one of the things that we're going to see a lot of in the coming months, if you haven't seen it already, is if it's not your client or my client personally, it is a family member who is out of a job, was financially fragile going into this crisis, isn't getting paid now. And to keep my client financially secure and their plan on track, I have to give them tools to pass through the family. Like you definitely, if you're not going to be able to pay a bill, you don't just say, ugh, I can't pay my bills. You have to proactively reach out to creditors. You have to proactively let your mortgage holder know you're going to be late. You have to talk to your landlord. You have to know what the government and community programs are that are out there. You have to talk to somebody who can help you know whether it makes any sense at all to tap a 401k or a thrift plan now that rules are relaxed on that. You have to know that even in a pandemic, a payday loan is just going to make things worse. It's not going to help. And so getting the message out that there's a lot to do other than say, I can't, I'm drowning here, people want to help. The Foundation for Financial Planning is setting up pro bono consultations for people. If my client called me with somebody in their family or friend tree that needed help, I'm happy to get on the phone and connect them with somebody who can help, because it will drag everybody down if we let people who are fragile collapse.
Well put. Perfect break time. Why don't we take a few and we'll listen to what the sponsor of the show, WEPA, can do for our listeners.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you: WEPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WEPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WEPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WEPA to Fegley, visit waepa.org today. WEPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network, 1500 a.m. WEPA's been insuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WEPA at waepa.org.
Welcome back to a serious discussion, but put in understandable language, with Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner. We're talking about the financial do's and don'ts during a pandemic. So sorry, we were moving pretty quick and then we took the break. So let's get back up to speed. So where did we leave off, Karen?
Well, we were just talking about how everybody has to understand that in their friend or family circle, somebody's really struggling. So even though your clients or my clients are mostly federal government employees and getting paid, all of their spouses may not be. Their pseudo-adult children, their siblings. So it's good to know that there's a lot of help out there. And if we're not proactive, we're not going to find it. And there's a lot of snowball effect if we're not paying our bills, if we're not proactive, it will get worse. So I was curious what you're thinking about, Bob, when it comes to this, the CARES Act. You know, we're getting these tax laws once a year now that are kind of, I don't know about you, they're kind of making my head spin. Before we figured out something from the Secure Act, that seems like so long ago, now we have the CARES Act, and there's a lot of provisions in there that I think people really should slow down and take a little look at, but then understand, just because I can do something, is it really in my best interest, right? So with the CARES Act, we were able to take bigger loans from our 401k plans, just because instead of limiting what I can borrow from my account to $50,000 to $100,000, is that really what I should do? Or is there a better way for me to handle it? And the only way I can figure that out is to understand the real cost of taking money out of a retirement plan. Am I really just borrowing it and getting it back? Or realistically, I'm taking it out and may not be able to pay it back. Either way, we look at something called the lost opportunity cost. So if I borrow money out and that, you know, was growing at a reasonable pace and never get it back in there, that's a price I pay for the rest of my life. Would it have been better for me to take a little home equity line of credit? I mean, that sounds so risky, but some people know that this is just a temporary problem. They're getting back to work. You know, my income might be paused a bit, but it will be back to work full time. So maybe I should just take a little short-term loan and get that paid back, and not for the rest of my life have a smaller retirement account because I couldn't get my loan paid back with the lost opportunity.
I like
you can't put back what it would have earned.
I like what you just said, because if I take the loan somewhere, and if I can't pay it back, I could always take the money out of the thrift to pay it back if my house was in jeopardy.
Correct. Right. So I think the important message for people is taking money out of a retirement plan is really last resort. I remember when the first time the I'm reading the CARES Act, and I literally said out loud, no, because people will get the impression that because our lawmakers said that we could do it, that this is where we should go first. And it's almost, from my point of view, it's the place I should go last. Maybe payday loans would be. I would take money out of a retirement plan before a payday loan, and I would certainly, if I was really counseling somebody who had 29.99% credit card debt and no other resources, we might have to go to the retirement plan. I get it, but for so many people, it's just the biggest pot of money and the easiest one to get, and yet it's such an expensive step.
A good point. And with regards to the thrift, there's two sides of the thrift, the Roth side and the traditional side. The traditional side is really a powder keg of taxable income. The Roth, not so. But somebody might say, well, if I could take the money out of the Roth and I wouldn't have to pay taxes on it, maybe that's the way to look at it. And I'm not so sure of that, because that's a tax-free investment. And not for today, not for tomorrow, but for life.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's hard to get people to understand. It's so counterintuitive when you say you can take money out of the Roth account and it's tax free. It's not because you were a lucky person who was chosen not to have to pay tax on it. You already paid the tax on it. What's tax-free about a Roth is the earnings. And if that account doesn't stay in there to earn a lot of money that hopefully will be treated when you withdraw it tax-free, then you really didn't have any benefit, right? Sometimes I've had to suggest to people, you know what, you need to be putting money in the traditional, because you're paying so much in tax, you're coming up a little short, and you're struggling to pay for daycare and your mortgage and all your other fixed expenses. If you would just do traditional thrift contributions and pay less in tax now, you'd have several thousand dollars in your pocket this year that would give you that little bit of cushion each month. So you're not playing it so close and feeling like you're always on the verge of an emergency. So yeah, taking money out of the Roth is a strategy I think so many people just reach for. But that money has to stay in that Roth account for decades and grow lots of tax-free income before you can say, yeah, that was a good idea. Paid a little tax on my little contribution, and now I'm getting all this big account that's grown for a long time tax-free.
All right. Could we take
maybe work in the short term.
Three steps through beginning job to retirement? Let's say we're talking to a group of recently hired younger folks that have got a lot of future looking for. Maybe don't understand all the financial terms, Roth versus traditional, 401k versus TSP. But they need help just to get in the door and start to get in the game, so to speak. What's your advice to them?
Well, just TSP.gov. You know, they know that if you were paying a financial planner to give you advice, the financial planner would say, you want to put as much as you can and then round it up until it pinches a little bit into that thrift savings plan from your first paycheck. You don't want to stop at the 5%. You want to put as much as you can without credit card debt, right? Without missing out, missing fixed payments. And until tax law says that's enough, and tax law is saying it for young people at $19,500 in the year 2020. So every time there's a little pay raise, any time there's a cost of living adjustment, you obviously were living without it until it happened. So you take at least half of that new money when your paycheck when your income goes up a little bit, and you just put it right into thrift until tax law says, hey, slow down here. You've got 19.5 in, and then we leave you alone until you turn 50, right? So that's one decision. It's just you got to get the money in there. I can honestly say, Bob, after all of these years of giving advice, nobody has ever said, wait a minute, you made me put way too much money in my thrift plan. That never happens, right? You're never going to regret it. The second step is to know how to invest it, and young people or anybody at any age with a long-term horizon, meaning they're not spending this money in the next 5 to 10 years, goes with stock. That's the one that grows faster than inflation and taxes. Now, stocks clearly go up and down in value, but when the market drops, what do you say? Hey, I'm not using this money anytime soon, and I'm buying on sale. This is a good thing for me. Because I'm still an investor with a long time before I'm going to spend this money. And if you really feel intimidated by investments, or you're just not interested in investments, or you're a world-class procrastinator and you're never going to be paying attention to this stuff, you look really hard and long at an L fund, a life cycle fund that doesn't require it sort of you to wonder about, do I need to rebalance? It keeps a balance based primarily on stock, and then slowly but surely over time moves out of stock and into the G fund, and the G fund is the one that's like your savings account. It never drops in value, never grows very much, right?
Right.
Now, and it moves based on a point in the future. So if I pick the 2050 fund, it's mostly stock and just a little bit in the G fund and the F fund. If I pick the 2020 fund, it's almost all in the G fund. And in December, at the end of the year, there will be no 2020 fund because it's going to look exactly like the L income fund, which is mostly G. But what will happen, we'll get a 2060 fund, which is going to be 99% stock. So you just kind of, it's all you have to do is just think about, I'm a young person, I need to be in stock, but I hate thinking about this stuff, so give me the L fund that's mostly stock, and you leave it there. And once a year, as a personal financial planner, right, you're supposed to be in charge of your own stuff here. You just update goals, balance sheet, cash flow. Do I still have a long time frame? What's going on in my balance sheet? That would be part, your thrift is something you own, it's on your balance sheet. Yep, it's still in stock, done, right? Or, whoa, something happened in my life. I shouldn't be mostly in stock. I don't have a long-term horizon, or not as long as I thought. I have to think about changing my allocation. And that's all.
Okay. What about the mid-career person? I guess look at it two different ways. One, didn't pay too much attention to investing or savings early on, and now they're scratching their head looking at the end of the work life, but they're looking at how is it going to get paid for, and we don't have as much in the thrift as we could. How do you break that cycle? That's got to be tough to break. But what do you attack first?
You know, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. If I've met somebody, I say mid-career is you're 20 years in the workforce. Careers are now 40 years. Don't hate the messenger, but we're living longer. So even though you might be eligible to get a pension at 30 years, it's often hard for people to be financially secure enough with only 30 years in the workforce to call it a career. So it's just a good time to get people into healthy expectations here. This is where it's the part of the career where we manage expectations a bit and say, you know, if you really do want to still have the option of calling it a career in 30 years, then this is what has to happen, and we can get more concrete about what a standard of living costs. You know, by the time you've been in the workforce 20 years, you know you can live on less, and you know you don't want to. I mean, that's it in a nutshell, right? So if you really want to maintain this standard of living, or you even want it to be a little easier, now we can crunch a few numbers and say, okay, this is what it takes. And you can either put more in your thrift plan or work longer or split the difference. But now we can get a little bit more concrete. Sometimes it's just that easy. People get motivated. And sometimes there are big decisions to make. Sometimes we do have to tell the kids education is important, but you're going to have to pay for it. And that's just not a fun day at the office. You know, when you've got to help somebody be realistic about there's only so many dollars coming in the door, and we've got to make choices. Or I've got to tell somebody they've got too much house. It's been a mistake where, you know, there was a whole generation who saw their home values increase, and so they over their careers, and they assume that buying as much house as you can possibly afford is the way to financial security, and that message got subliminally programmed into a lot of people. We got a different reality here, and I've got a lot of clients who have been successful because they lived in a more modest house, or they took sacrifices early on that allowed them to put more in their thrift plan so that they have the second half of their career where they're starting to really just be confident, hey, I can pull this off. So it isn't always bad times. Sometimes mid-career is when you're coming into this, wow, I think this is paying off. I think this might actually work out.
Well, that's a terrific view. But again, the person in mid-career that never heard your good tutelage is going, how am I going to pay for this? Could you start with baby steps, put $100 a paycheck away, and then after a certain...
Look, I have an example in a webinar that I've done for NITP where somebody never put a dime in the thrift savings plan until they were 40. So maybe they just started with the government at 40, or maybe they were just oblivious to, hey, this is the best thing since sliced bread until they were 40, and they make $60,000 a year. They put 10% of their salary or $6,000 in and then increase it 2.5% a year. So, you know, they're getting little pay raises or getting cost of living allowances. At age 65, that's 25 years. That's not even a full career. They have $650,000 in the thrift plan, assuming they earn 7% a year, which is a reasonable average for stocks, even if we include nightmares like 2008 or 2020 or 2020 rather, February, March. So I don't know about you. $650,000 sounds like a lot of money to me.
That together, you know, with this person probably being FERS, this person then's got money in the bank. They have money in this other bank called the thrift, and they have this annuity, and they have Social Security.
Right.
You got to be feeling pretty good.
And that's why I always say TSP.gov is the best website in the world to motivate you. If you've never played with the numbers before, if you've never seen, they almost call it the miracle of compounding, right, where I'm putting in money, and maybe in the pandemic while my spouse or partner lost their job, I'm going to reduce my thrift contribution. I get that. Some people are going to have to do that. But all the money that's in there is still growing. And I'm still going to put something in there because I'm definitely going to get the match. That's the message people need to see is just go to that website and just play with those calculators. If I drop my thrift down while my partner is out of work, and then put it, you know, get back up to full contribution like I was doing by next year, yeah, it's a hit. But it's not nearly the hit as I'm not going to put the money in there because what if my partner doesn't get back to work? right? Or I've never done thrift because I've always got something else demanding my money.
Okay, okay. I thought we went off air for a second. So, sorry. So an individual, I get these same type of questions, not, certainly not financial planning. And Andrew says, you need to take a break and then you can talk. So why don't we take a break? We'll be back in just a few and we'll listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to the discussion of financial planning, financial do's and don'ts with Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner. Radio show star. I just basically sit here and wait for the breaks. So Karen, we had worked our way from beginning. We were mid-career, and now we're looking at the door of retirement, and we go,
right.
I don't know if I want to, or more importantly, I can retire now because I don't think, probably I'm FERS, so my three-legged stool of retirement, the annuity, is going to be there. Maybe there
right.
isn't enough in the thrift. And Social Security, maybe I'll wait till I'm at a certain age where I get 100% of it. I'm anxious. How do we talk them off the ledge, Karen?
Right. So being anxious is not the end game. Being anxious is the little human nature signal that I've got to get answers, right? I can't just worry about this stuff. If I'm concerned about my retirement, I've got to stop and really think this through and give myself the confidence that I can make smart decisions here. So let's take them kind of one at a time. If I had somebody who had always kind of thought 2020 was going to be retirement year, but they like their job and they're able to stay on, I'd stay on another year or a while. Let's go back to 2008. I'll tell you why I'm saying this. In 2008, remember how awful that was for stocks in particular, right? If you saw the stock market, your thrift plan that had been this really nice, I can retire a number starting to drop, and all the way you decide, I'm not going to retire. I'm just going to put my money into the thrift like I always have, and I'm not going to submit any retirement papers. It was kind of demoralizing because at the end of 2008, even though you put in a full contribution, which I think was $18,000 or maybe 24 if you could do the catch up, or 23 something back then, it wasn't quite as high. Even though I put all that money in there, my account balance was lower in December than it was in January. And then in 2009, talk about demoralizing, it got even worse. Just when you think it can't get uglier, you're still putting money in thrift and it got worse. But we got this big, big quarter, the second quarter of 2009, when I think the C fund was up 60% in 3 months or something, just this unheard of, we call that the bounce off the bottom. And by the end of 2009, my thrift would have been bigger than it ever was in my entire life. By 2010, you couldn't even tell anything bad had happened. And who am I describing? Somebody who just stayed on the job and continued thrift contributions and bought stock during these great buying days, 2008 and early 2009. It was like 15 months of not good news for the stock market, but good news for a stock market purchaser. it didn't really mean delaying retirement forever. It meant delaying retirement for a little while. Clearly, there are people who can't do that. You know, there are some people who hit the mandatory retirement, right? But that's the first thing I'd be looking at is, do you like your job? Why not just stay on and really let thrift take care of itself? Think about the, if I was retired or I had to retire, I would definitely be thinking about not spending. If I had planned to do the take everybody on the family cruise, you don't want to go on a cruise right now anyway. Let's just postpone some fun stuff and rethink what our definition of fun is for a little bit in the future. And let's live modestly. Maybe even consider working a little bit part-time or the second career that you'd kind of hope you didn't have to do, but it's out there for you because of your area's expertise. It doesn't have to be for long. All we're trying to do is bridge the gap between spending from an account that is down. We just don't want to take that out. If you been working with a financial planner and we knew that you were going to want to spend money, we've got that money in the cash position. But if you hadn't been working with somebody, then just don't spend when the accounts are down. What else could we do? Reduce expenses, find some income someplace else. And that way, we don't make it worse, right? So my first choice is always, if we can stay, and then if we can't, how do we reduce expenses or turn up a little income? And eventually, it wasn't fun, but we get through it. We had people who retired in 2008. They're still alive. They're still fine. They didn't take the big round-the-world trip, but in 2009 or 10, but they took it in the interim, and they're fine.
Okay, so now I'm one of your happy clients, and I call up, and I'm maybe 10 years away from retirement. Maybe I'm 10 years past when I should have retired, but can I take some money out now, Karen, and just really spend it on something that I would never have spent before?
Well, if you were my client, Bob, I would know how to answer that question, because I would know whether or not it would have a big effect on your future decisions or a negligible effect. I feel like I'm personally keeping the economy going. I put myself in a financial position where I can make some decisions and be making some charitable contributions. And if you were calling me and saying, I really want to do this, I really want to invest in something, or I really want to help somebody, or I really just want to do something fun, there are people who can afford to do that. But it also might be the most expensive time in your entire financial plan to do that, and I might coach you just to be a little bit more modest in your ambitions. It's your money. It's your plan. Or just delay your ambition to be more generous or to have a little bit more fun or to have a little relax. That's what I love about a dollar. I can cut it in half. This is what I love about a timeline. I can push and pull it. It's my plan, right? It's my money. And so I can give it the context I need to make really good decisions.
All righty. Again, working with the, let's call it the troubled client, not mentally, but financially, what would you look back and say, what was maybe a great success in turning that person around?
Oh, there have been so many. There have been so many really wonderful people who ended up in financial messes that they that weren't of their doing, and were people who were, life just, I always say, just slapped them hard. So I knew a guy who his daughter, he ended up raising grandchildren, something, there was a tragedy in the family, and it was just so much stress that his wife said, I love all of you, but I can't take this. We were supposed to be retired. And he went back to work, and he worked the night shift so he could be there for these teenage grandkids and put the money in thrift. And I just got to tell you, I'm smiling when I'm telling you this, he never lost his focus. He never threw up his hands and said, this is so unfair. And he's got a fabulous retirement right going on now. He's got one of the kids, I think the grandkids, is coming out of medical school, and he's the client splits his time between kind of resort living and being close to the kids. I mean, it just, if you know what you need or want out of life and you understand the basics of financial planning, just you can make that happen, right? Even when life happens, I'm a planner, not a psychic. I didn't know this guy was going to be raising his grandkids. I didn't know his marriage was going to fall apart. He certainly didn't. But he stayed focused, and it worked great. So I think the message really is, it's as much as we all like formulas, and as much as we all like, you know, just give me the steps here, 1, 2, and 3. Yep, I got it. I can handle it. It really is personal. So we get this new tax law that says you don't have to take a required minimum distribution this year. I had a lot of clients who need to take the required, they need the money. And I've got some clients who had already taken it. And we have to really talk about, well, it doesn't make any sense to really put that back. And then we have financial institutions out there who know that there's a new law, but their software is just not set up. There's no law just happened that said, that sounded like, oh, great, I don't have to take it, so I shouldn't. A required minimum distribution is just something that people now at 72 are supposed to be taking out of retirement accounts and declaring it as taxable if it's coming out of a traditional account, and now we don't have to. But the answer to whether or not you should is going to be personal.
Well put. Karen, we've talked, and I always mess this up. How does somebody contact you and or Schaefer Financial? I'm going to ask the engineer of perfection.
This is what I always tell everybody. I'm now Googleable. That's a verb that I've made up. And you just, if you can remember, Schaefer gets spelled with every letter you can put in it. I'm a Kelly that married into this, but it's S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R, and we're in Rockville, Maryland. You can find us. And I also always want to assure people that they, before they decide they might want some help, they should really be thinking about what would that help be. Articulate what it is you want. I want a second opinion, or I've got a technical question that really is either tax or investment or something to do with mom. You know, really, what are you really looking for? And then go to the CFP board, Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, has a great website where it's got a bunch of questions that this is what you ask somebody before you start saying, yeah, I think I want to pay that person to give me advice. I talked to somebody this morning who got advice from their supervisor to pull her money out of the G fund. And I went back to, but what, I know your supervisor meant well, but what qualified them to give you financial advice? I talked to somebody who listened to a free class. Somebody came to their campus and told them that they shouldn't put money in the thrift plan. They should buy whole life insurance instead.
Ooh.
Whoa. Yeah, that was at an agency that wants to remain unnamed. But, yeah, so there's a lot of bad advice out there, and you can steer clear of that if you go to the CFP board's website, Certified Financial Planner Board's website, look for questions to ask a financial planner, and know that what you want is out there, but you have to know what would be valuable to you.
Okay, valuable in investing. We haven't hit the term Roth too much with regards to the Roth TSP and or a Roth IRA. And talking about,
you know what, the most important thing you can do there, Bob, is make sure people slow down and understand the decision and calculation to make a contribution to a Roth thrift is very different from the decision tree to make a contribution to a Roth IRA. And it's unnecessarily confusing, but that's a real important point. So if I was looking at whether I should contribute money to my the Roth opportunity or side of the thrift plan or the traditional side, that's a big deal on my tax return this year. Because the Roth, I got to pay tax on the money before I put it in there. The traditional thrift, I don't. If we were talking about IRAs, it is very likely that it's not a big deal this year because both contributions to traditional and Roth IRAs are very likely to be taxable to me. I'm making them with after-tax dollars. So when I'm teaching a class, sometimes people kind of get the impression, I really don't like the Roth all that much. Maybe use it a little bit, but not if you're struggling cash flow-wise. I'm talking about thrift. And then later on, they're thinking, what? I didn't think you liked the Roth. No, no, no. We've switched. We're talking about IRAs. That's when a webinar with graphics or a live class where you can look people in the eye and recognize they're getting it or they're not getting it, or you can, you know, use visual aids to say, no, I'm over here in thrift land, or I've left thrift land and I'm in IRA world. They're different things. We can't shorthand those conversations. It's all about the adjectives.
We're in short land right now. We have 30-some seconds left. So, Karen, one more time, how does somebody approach you?
Oh, I'm Karen Schaefer, Certified Financial Planner in Rockville, Maryland. I'm online. You can find me.
Okay. This has been terrific, and we got your contact points earlier, and great session. I'm going to go change my habits now.
Well, I'm still in my yoga pants. That's a habit that's going to be really hard for me to change when we come out the other end of this. But stay healthy, Bob. Always great chatting with you.
Same here. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.